Lame Duck Logic 101, next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Great to be with you. This is an important topic, and it really does tie in with our upcoming conference Friday and Saturday. It's all day Friday and half the day on Saturday, 9 to noon.
Yeah, it's basically 8:30 to noon on Saturday, yes.
That's right.
Starts so, at 9 o'clock on Friday morning, goes until, well, we have breaks for lunch and dinner, and then there's a little networking event. But we're going to go until about 9 o'clock Friday night with our special guest speaker, Pastor Joseph Moorcraft from Chalcedon Presbyterian Church in Georgia. And he is a nationally recognized and sometimes world-renowned theologian, historian, author. He goes on world excursions on the history of the church and the history of Christianity and teaches. He's taught in Scotland and in Rome and in other places, and he's just fantastic. He knows his history, and he knows the thread of history is woven by God, and he shows God's providential hand through history and how God works to make his will effective through history.
Oh, yeah, believe me. People have asked me if I could give them a sample of something, and I said, oh, yeah, go out to Sermon Audio, pull up Joe Moorcraft III, and I would especially recommend that people listen to, it's going to take a while, this is not instant, but I would especially recommend that people listen to his 48-part sermon series on the history of the Reformation. Honestly, that is one of the most brilliant. I don't know how this man has had the time that he's had to put the stuff out that's out there that he's done. But the fact is that you and I have, on many a trip, have spent hours listening to his lectures. And I can tell you, it never gets boring.
No, not at all.
If you're a history lover, it's never boring. And I'm a history lover, so he's dug up stuff. I remember that thing he came up with. Do you remember we were coming back from Maryland, and all of a sudden Sir Walter Raleigh's name came up in the history of the Reformation? Of course, I knew he was available in the time frame, but that he had done some things that I was not aware of. So,
yeah, it's amazing, and I honestly wish that we just had Joe speaking from the opening of the conference all the way to the close with nothing else in between. But I don't want to tax him too much and wear him out. So we've got some other speakers that are going to be talking. I believe somebody that our listeners might know by the name of Chuck Michaelis is going to be doing a couple presentations. Ricky Pepin from Institute on the Constitution is going to be sharing. Dr. Sasha Fallacord is going to be talking about biblical economics. And there's another unsavory character that we've invited to the conference, some guy by the name of Barry Sheets, who's going to be talking a little bit about policy. So we've got quite a good lineup, I believe, and registration is still open. You can go to our website at principledpolicy.com and register, and it's $20 for the two-day conference. We tried to make it as inexpensive as possible in order to get people to come in and hear Dr. Moorcraft, hear these ideas, and understand how to engage the world for Christ effectively. And so that's what we're doing there with our conference. Again, register. It starts at 9 o'clock on Friday morning and goes through noon on Saturday at Grace Orthodox Presbyterian Church on Postlethwaite Road, Northwest Columbus, up off Bethel Road. So we hope you can join us.
Great. Now back to the topic. One of the things that worries me, every time, Barry, we get into a president that's quote-unquote popular. This happened during Reagan's administration. It happened during Bill Clinton's administration. It happened during George W. Bush's administration. Somebody comes out and decides it's a good idea to get rid of the 22nd Amendment.
Yes, and for our listeners who don't have access to their pocket constitutions right now, the 22nd Amendment was the one that limited the terms of the President of the United States to two consecutive four-year terms.
And it never fails. There was a move to make sure that Bill Clinton can get a third term. There was a move to make sure that Ronald Reagan can get a third term, even though Reagan really didn't do one. I can assure you that Bill Clinton did. George W. Bush was probably tired of it by the end of it. But Barack Obama would love nothing better than to not only get the 12 years that Franklin D. Roosevelt got, but he'd like to get reelected the fourth time and serve the full 16 years. And I'll be quite honest, that would be nightmarish, but from my perspective.
I thought it was hilarious, though, Chuck, because I'm glad you bring up this comparison to Franklin Delano Roosevelt, because I really got to thinking about it here the other day. I ran into somebody, and in our local area, there's been this scenario where they've got a place down by the fairgrounds, and every morning there's like dozens and dozens of cars parked there, and they've got a couple of old school buses. And they hand out yellow vests, and people get on the school buses, and then they drive them around, and they're supposed to be doing, quote-unquote, storm cleanup. Well, Chuck, we haven't had a major, really powerful storm around this area for a while, since early winter, or maybe from last summer's derecho, but this is a federal-funded program that the county is administering, and basically it's for people who are not able to work any other place. And I don't mean that they're physically unable. I mean, they just can't get a job. And I got to thinking about it, and I thought, wow, everything from the stimulus and the recovery to these kind of programs, I kind of know how my grandparents must have felt living in the Roosevelt administration. Just, we don't have a world war going on right at the moment.
You didn't have one until 1941, so, right. I mean, at least that we were involved in. So, sure, it started in 39, but we had Roosevelt from 33 until 1941, 8 years before we really had to deal in this country openly and completely. And it was the end of 1941, so really 1942. So you had almost 9 years. What you're basically talking about, Barry, is the fact that we've got the Civilian Conservation Corps without calling it.
We got the CCC back again. The WPA is probably not long to follow if the federal government thinks it's a way to buy votes in the 14 election.
I know people whose parents were involved in the 3C and will tell you they still worship Franklin Delano Roosevelt as some kind of a hero, because he, quote unquote, made sure my parents were fed. And I've told this individual several times, no, your parents made sure they were fed. They were given a job and they took it. The fact that Roosevelt had to destroy part of the economy to create a job for them, that is not impressive to me. And the fact is that doing make work programs to plant pine trees in rows really is not an impressive work to me. You can still see those forests if you go up, for instance, a place up by Cadillac, Michigan. You can go by, and you can see where trees were planted in rows.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes. Corn. Well, as you pass by, you can see the spaces between. And I'm like, well, okay, I get that. Could that not have been done by forestry companies? Could not forestry companies, you know, companies that specialized in the planting of trees and forestry husbandry type thing, could they not have been contracted to do that? Or could not have lumber companies come in and planted those trees in lieu of someday being able to log them and then replant? There are all kinds of things that could have been done, but instead they just basically came in, planted trees, and then moved on to the next thing. It's make work. And this is the kind of thing that it looks impressive until you really kind of break it down and see what was done. And it's one-time work. It's not ongoing, really is not productive. Now, of course, that stuff is all sacrosanct. So you can't touch it. You can't go in it. You can't log it, blah, blah, blah. It's all smoke and mirrors, Barry. And that's kind of what the point of this article that we're looking at from the American Thinker. That's their entire point, is these lame duck presidencies very often fall apart because you can't do the smoke and mirror show anymore. Now everybody, and we're already seeing it, now everybody is vying to replace the lame duck.
Yeah.
So the lame ducks out there trying the same tactics that worked during the first term while he was running for president the entire time. And now that he's not running for president, it doesn't work because everybody's going, not on my watch, baby. We held on by our fingernails while we supported you. Now we're going to go out and see if we can gin up our own votes. And so some of the stuff that was highly unpopular, like gun control, nationalized healthcare, some of the people who were deeply in support of nationalized healthcare are now coming out and saying, boy, I don't think this dog's going to hunt.
They don't think you're going to be able to implement it where it's not going to destroy the economy, and they're right. Sad part about it is these are people who voted for it, including Jay Rockefeller, senator from West Virginia, and Max Baucus, senator from Montana.
Yeah, they're now out there saying this thing is going to be a boondoggle, and you can't keep blaming the Republicans. At this point, I'm sorry to say, enough of them voted for it. But you're not going to be able to place the blame on them. This is a Democratic millstone that they're going to have to carry around their neck. And when people start seeing, people don't realize that in October is when Obamacare really kicks in. And when that happens, you watch your insurance premiums. There are talks of doubling, tripling. We did a show a few days ago that talked about what was the percentage in Ohio. It was some gigantic percentage that they were going to see the increases on.
It was 80.9% increases in premiums.
Yeah. So everybody realizes this, that there is a major shift coming, and the Republicans really aren't smart enough to be in line to capitalize that. In fact, what they're trying to do in Ohio here, foolishly, is to actually get on the gravy train and expand Medicaid. Now, that sounds good, but what it really means is putting more people on the dole for this grossly overexpensive health care that's going to make it unaffordable for everybody and eventually force everybody over to a third-party pay. We're way off the track of where we wanted to go with this, but...
Yeah, but that's all right, because we do need to talk about this kind of thing, because, you know, just last Thursday, the Ohio House of Representatives passed their version of the state's budget. Now, the big kerfuffle among a lot of conservative groups was Governor John Kasich's appeal for and defense of and advocacy for linking into the money that the Obama administration is dangling out in front of states in order to expand their Medicaid rolls. Ohio was in line to get like $13 billion to expand their Medicaid rolls, and Kasich wanted it badly. But the House of Representatives basically said no to Medicaid expansion. Now, the big problem is, Chuck, just like any political group, they always left their options open. They're just like a good gambler. You never go in all in on one gambit. You always leave your options open. And so what they did was they passed provision in the budget to say that they could bring back and have hearings later on in the fall to more fully consider the matter. In other words, they're leaving the window open for them to actually go back and get the money after all of the dealing of the budget's over with, and then can say, well, oh, we're going to be in a shortfall, and hearkening back to the days of Ted Strickland and $8 billion holes in the state's budget, and like at the federal level, sequestration and things. Well, we got to have this money in order to balance things out.
Well, let's look at it this way, Barry, to let people know what a fake argument this is. What happens on the day when we have expanded Medicaid and put the 600,000 or whatever the number is, new people on what amounts to the dole, on the medical dole.
Right.
And the federal government says, okay, you are now responsible for paying for those people. They come out and say, we're no longer going to fund it because there's no money in the federal coffers. What's going to happen?
Well, they're going to come and try to take more tax dollars.
Sure. What's going to happen is, basically, you can't run a $13 billion program with about 11 million people without taking a whole lot of money, a lot more money, out of their pockets. And believe me, that's going to happen. The federal government is going to, at some point, say, the free money is now dried up. You are now responsible for that, but you can't eliminate the program.
Well, you're going to be responsible for it anyway, because in order to do it, it's $6.2 trillion in more spending. And then more debt spending by the federal government that they don't have already. And where are they going to come to get that money to fill that hole? From the taxpayers. So in other words, they're going to drive more people into the position of being eligible for Medicaid.
Well, look, Barack Obama's lame duck. Do you think he would hesitate? Again, he has nothing to worry. This is the downside of this lame duck thing. Sure, we'll be rid of the guy in 3 years. But the downside of it is he has no political reason to not do things like veto internet sales tax legislation. He doesn't have to get reelected. He would love nothing better than to sign an internet sales tax bill.
Of course.
Don't kid yourself, because that's a huge amount of revenue. And you think the states are going to be allowed to do that? Oh, no, the feds will do. We'll collect it for you and we'll send it to you. Ha, 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 ha. What fraction are you going to send us? Okay, Barry, I'm looking at the clock. We're out of time.
Right, and we need to still continue on, because there is another piece of this whole push on the gun bill that we need to talk about, and that is how liberal logic defies logic.
Exactly. Again, join us for our conference this Friday and Saturday, April 26th and 27th. at Grace Orthodox Presbyterian Church, Postlethwaite Road, Columbus, Ohio. Go to our website, www.principledpolicy.com, and please register, because we'd like to know you're coming, although you can show up at the door, and we'll be happy to make you a badge and get you in the room. So join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.